Hello, everyone.
Hey, brothers and sisters, it's Taking It Down, and this week we got breakdowns and discussions on the first two episodes of Dark Matter from Apple TV Plus, and the movie that's now on Netflix, Butterfly in the Sky. It's a document of the famous PBS show Reading Rainbow, which gets us into a lot of different discussions about reading in general. So stick around for that. You know, it's eye-opening what you likely don't know about ladies in coaching and officiating in sports. And yeah, it's true that the Alabama Take features not one, but two sports podcasts. But allow me to expand on The Stare Down, hosted by Mallory McCormack. The Stare Down's a female-driven sports podcast that gives Mallory an opportunity to share some takes as well as some guests on the latest in sports, some results, but a lot of news. She brings a pointed point of view for female sports, and you get that sports fanatic who knows just as much, if not more, than her male counterparts. The Stare Down often gets deep into topics geared toward female sports and well beyond in the sports world. Right now, Mallory's currently doing a multi-part series on coaching and officiating by women, which I mentioned. Insightful things. You'll learn something. Visit thealabamatake.com or any podcast app to find it. The Stare Down. We at Taking It Down are so excited for our next episode. It's number 200. I don't know how we got here. Well, we want you to be a part of it. Celebrate with us. Send us a question, or you can even record a voice message on thealabamatake.com. But send us a question in any format you want, any social media. You can send it straight to us with thealabamatake@gmail.com. If you'd rather use social media, just DM us. We will get to your question. Ask us anything about the podcast, about TV, about streaming, movies even. I want everyone who enjoys this podcast to send us a question. All right, what's going on? So I finished the Apple TV Plus show Sugar. Caused a little controversy. I don't know if it caused controversy. It caused a little ripple in the TV world. Starred Colin Farrell doing one of his best roles to date as the private investigator John Sugar, who was hot on the heels of a missing girl in very noirish L.A. It's the series that garnered a huge and very rude spoiler from Catherine Van Arendonk on the Vulture website. It's also the series I lauded with the first episode or two. I cooled on it a little in the middle of its run, but I did believe two things, which critics disagree with me. The big event of Sugar didn't really ruin it, but it also didn't change much, so that's a good and a bad thing. I just thought it was overall well done. It was interesting. I really did like the show. Had there been another actor playing John Sugar and it wasn't Colin Farrell, you know, I don't know that I would sing its praises as much. A lot of what I liked rested on Colin Farrell's shoulders, bringing this private eye to life and just giving us an absolutely genuine character, a very human character, someone you wanted to just watch. Very likable. When talking about Sugar in a text with co-host Donovan, I just asked him a series of questions. Do you like Colin Farrell? Do you like him in a well-tailored suit? Would you want to see him play in the nicest person imaginable? And what if that person was a private investigator in a very noir-like version of L.A.? Well, buddy, I got the show for you. So maybe that'll sell you on it. I'm interested to hear what you guys think because of the waves that it made. And I've also watched two or three more episodes of the Hulu series Under the Bridge since last I've mentioned it here. It's the drama based on the actual death of a high school student in Victoria, Canada. It doled out its mystery perhaps a little longer than needed. Likely be the same piece of television with one less episode, but it did allow you to kind of live with some of these people. It's hard to call them characters because they are, for the most part, real people other than one or two. My initial complaint was having the very real author here, played by Elvis's granddaughter, Riley Keough, felt unnecessary. They used her kind of as a plot point or a device throughout the season because she wasn't actually there at the time of the event. I kind of griped about the way she was handling the character at first. It felt like a lot of moping. But I come around her performance. Riley Keough does get much better. And the idea of her being in there, the author as a character being there during the investigation, comes to fruition. I get its intention. Still kind of sits as an odd choice even towards the end. But, it, you know, I see what they're doing. The show, though, does get more and more captivating with each and every episode. I may barely spoil one part of an episode here. Under the Bridge and its creators does this really careful, considerate job of allowing us to know Rena, the victim, perhaps better than other shows of this genre. And it links us to these people. So the low-key spoiler is that one episode spends a lot of time with the background of her parents. It's actually not a bad episode either. It does take the eye off the ball just a little, but it's still a good episode. The penultimate episode from last week, though, there's this heartbreaking moment where the father asks what kids are saying about his daughter. The finale is set to air today, if you're listening on Tuesday. I can recommend this one, though. It's a good one. Let's bring in the co-host here. Let's get Adam and Donovan.
An elevator tape projection.
Joining me now, it's Adam and Donovan. We don't have to spend hardly any time on this at all, but I do want to ask y'all to begin. How did you two celebrate the most important day of the year? Bob Dylan turned 83 on Thursday.
I read a Stereo Gum thing that Stereo Gum shared where Charlie Brown's being told by Linus that Bob Dylan will turn 30, and it's the most depressing thing he's ever heard.
That's a classic.
And then I drank myself to sleep.
Yeah. Adam, I imagine you picked up the guitar, played a little Times They Are Changing.
I just, him being 83, what do you make of that, Blaine?
A lot. There's a lot of directions to go with that. I'm just surprised he's, you know, he had to have done his fair amount of drugs and drinking.
Sure.
And he's with us and seems to be healthy. He certainly tours like a healthy person.
You are probably much more familiar with his biography than I am. I've read the book. I've read articles here and there. But, you know, his personal life seems pretty outside the public view. Do you think that has something to do with it, that he has not really been a celebrity conventionally in many, many years? And when he goes home, is he living a pretty quiet life, stress-free?
I think he just stays busy. I think there's something to be said about a person who stays busy. There's this great line in Heart-Worn Highways, not even spoken by one of the stars. It's Townes Van Zandt's neighbor, old black guy, and they ask him, you know, how have you made it so long? Because he must be pretty old. And he says, always be doing something.
Stay moving.
I believe in that because, like, my grandparents, they were able to retire, like, fairly early just because they worked very hard and played their cards right. But they were like, we know exactly what we're going to do, you know. And, like, they always had something to do. Like, even if it was just, like, we're going to go play golf with our friends, right? Like, they were busy.
Keep something on the calendar.
How many times
do you see someone retire and then die a year later?
Thank God that Nick Saban has this job with ESPN.
he could be giving up the ghost if not.
I'm horrified.
I don't know, do you think? Real question, actually. Do you think Miss Terry will allow Nick Saban to die?
He will have to check in on that. Yeah, I'm sure. Last, we'll shift gears. I don't have a good segue here, but...
Oh, I can tell my real answer for what I was doing for Bob Dylan's birthday.
Go ahead.
So I went to trivia, and the whole time I was super afraid that there was going to be like a Blaine-level Bob Dylan question.
Was there?
No, thank God.
Was there any at all?
No, not a bit.
Missed opportunity.
Were you afraid because you're part of a team, and you thought that they may look to you?
Yes, because last time I did it, we got first place, and they keep saying it was because of me, which is not true. But you hype me up like this. I'm gonna get some anxiety.
What was the question that gave you this ringer status?
I was able to put some Roman emperors in order.
Damn.
So Bob Dylan is your Roman Empire.
Yeah, it was Caligula, Vespasian, and Marcus Aurelius. Those are pretty
Marcus
easy to
Aurelius.
Do.
I was hoping you would say him. I'm reading a little of his work. Last week, speaking of what's good for me, last week I hailed Dark Matter as a really entertaining first three episodes of TV on Apple TV Plus, and it's since aired its fourth episode called The Corridor. We won't get that far. It's based on the book of the same name by Blake Crouch, who also wrote the TV series. He's heavily involved.
This This makes me interested in it, because I do think he's actually a savvy writer.
Seems to be.
Yeah.
I praised the show for a few things, but namely, just the premise drew me. I was enthralled by that idea. Adam, you've since watched the first episode. Excuse me, the first two. I'm glad you did, because they came out as a pair, and I'm curious if that was needed or does that play a role? So we can talk a little about the first two episodes. So we'll put a little spoiler warning up for episodes 1 and 2. There are 4 total, so maybe we can all catch up at some point and talk more of Dark Matter if Adam likes it. What'd you think, Adam, just overall?
I guess we do the pre-spoiler recommend or not.
Yeah. Let's do that before we do any spoilers. Yeah, because last week I was all in. Where are you?
I'm pretty into it. And I need to... It reminded me what we said on this program before, that Apple TV seems to be the HBO of the moment, and that they just make good stuff. And yet again, this is good stuff. I thought the acting is pretty superb. The story has been great so far. The environment, the mood, it all feels fresh, but like it's hitting the beats of prestige television without becoming a caricature of itself, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
That's high praise.
Because there's so much, I was just thinking to go with Adam's point, like there's so much like good TV, quote unquote good TV, that's like, it's got a couple stars and it's not horribly written. And it's like, oh, okay, we've seen this a million times.
Or it just lays there on the screen.
Yes.
There's no life Michael. Much.
I think the acting really elevates this, and I could see how maybe I wouldn't be wild about the book, that maybe the show is more literary than the book would be. Hmm. Donovan, did you give, out of 4 stars, what are you giving the book? You read the book, right?
Out of 4, 3 probably for me, which is not like, maybe 3.5, but probably a solid 3,
okay.
where it was like, oh, this was enjoyable, but not like it didn't change my life. But more read it than don't.
Yeah, I thought you were more lukewarm than that for some reason.
No, like I didn't think it was like the greatest thing in the world, but mm-hmm. it wasn't something that I was like, I could take it or leave. You know, like it was like, I don't regret reading this.
Sometimes I feel like modern literature, or maybe all literature, and with time, the stuff that doesn't hold up just fades away. So we have the luxury of things being, you know, curated for us, but can sometimes have a great premise and ask great questions, but not really deliver on the quality of writing, character development, whatever. And you end up with these big ideas that just feel like bullet points in a narrative. And it seems to me, I've only seen the 2 episodes, but that this is doing a thing where it's asking and making you feel the question at the same time.
You know, Donovan gave it praise enough by saying that it avoids what The Martian and its writer had, which is just get knee deep in the facts and just sound like a owner's manual. And
right,
I think Donovan, you mentioned that the book itself doesn't do that.
No, it is not. So like the Martian is a very, very annoying example of what is, you know, usually referred to as hard science fiction. And this is the kind of, you know, like even you have like, you can go back to like Robert Heinlein being like, yeah, me and my wife did, you know, math all over our floor to see if the asteroid orbit made sense. Who fucking cares? I mean, sometimes it's...
I'm with you.
That's me being an asshole. Sometimes it's cool, but sometimes I'm like, who fucking cares that you blew yourself up because of potatoes? I don't. And also I hate your tone of voice. Like something about that, like like snarky, too smart for you, too whatever. Like, it's like, you're not, like, I've met you and you're not fun and you're not funny. And I don't think that this does that at all.
We could get into specifics of the first 2 episodes now, I think. Yeah, I really found the show propulsive. In fact, I'll say this about the 4th, which is nothing at all. It's the longest episode by far. And I swear, when it ended, I thought that was only 30 minutes of TV, but it was an hour runtime. It's good. Just entertaining, propulsive. The idea is big enough, but also brought down to almost like an action movie kind of level. Here's the big idea, but let's just put it in let's just give it a story.
Yeah, absolutely. And they dangle the big ideas out there just enough that they're almost like, through the first two episodes at least, they are like an extra character or place would be, if that makes sense, instead of being...
Say that again. What did you...
That they're almost like an extra character or a setting or something, the big ideas. Like, you know you're existing in big theoretical questions and big sciencey stuff happens and there are binders that are opened and answers are looked for, but what you feel is more a romantic relationship, jealousy between friends, a sense of place. You know, I was struck in the first episode, you know, right off the bat, he receives this job offer that could change their lives, and he says, well, our lives are here. The level of acting by everyone in that scene, and writing too, and set design and all of these things work together, that I really felt that someone is living in a place and a time that they are fully present for. And so when these big questions start getting asked, the sense of dislocation is that much more profound.
That's really good. Well said.
That's really interesting, because that really speaks to something that I've sometimes thought, which is like you take an Oppenheimer and an Einstein or whatever, and they are thinking the big thoughts. But at the same time, like if you look at their biographies, they're completely human, right? Like no better or worse than any of us.
Right, right. And this one, I mean, I think the whole, I shouldn't say this only having seen two episodes in front of Blaine, who has seen everything that's available, and Donovan, who's read the book, but it seems to be a question of what is a life, what is home, all these kind of things that are could be so trite and so cliched in the wrong hands, but already through just a couple episodes, and I didn't realize they released at the same time, Blaine, but it just feels heavy and well-earned.
I'm shocked you could only limit yourself to two episodes, because that second episode ends with that huge death.
Yeah, which was...
murder, I should say.
Shocking.
Yeah, it kind of was.
In an era when, you know, we praise Shogun, or at least I did over and over again, for not falling into the Ned Stark reality or the House of Cards season two, you know, and he pushes her in front of the train after all the whatever. Obviously, there's a little... We're into spoilers here. There's some leeway because we're not actually losing a member of the cast here in many ways.
Right.
But
yeah, she's still going to continue as the normal wife in our world.
Right.
Jennifer Connelly, by the way.
What a fun way to play with stakes, that you don't lose a major star, yet violence is happening it's funny to say violence happening brutally, but I mean, there was no negotiation. There was no like, here's why I'm here. It's you're in my way. Bullet between the eyes. Let's go.
Speaking of episode two, I really enjoyed the conversation that he has with the alternate versions of his friend and his wife, though she's not his wife in this reality.
That was fantastic. When they're sitting after the gallery.
Yeah, smoking the J.
Yeah, fantastic.
It was so good. So fascinating. Like, and again, I mentioned this last week. What would the... me who made this decision be doing right now? What's he doing? Is he by the pool raking in the millions?
Yeah.
Passively.
Well, and I think it's doing a fine job of making you wonder all of, you know, which me is earning the most passive income, but also like, what would I do if I were put in this situation? You know, always, I think with these shows, you want to quickly understand the rules of what's happening and then try to like figure out how you would respond and then overrate your ability to do such a thing. You know, like in reality, I'm probably also going to the hospital and trying to find out what's wrong with me, not turning into like a superhero.
It does remind me of that like tweet you shared with us. I think it was yesterday, the one that's like, fantasy world. I would simply not carry the cursed item. Me like getting brain damage 23 hours a day from my phone, right? Like, what would I do?
Right.
Do you want to know the moment where I thought I would do better than the Joel Edgerton character of Jason?
What's that?
I thought. It was in episode one toward the end where he's getting kidnapped by himself, by the alternate version of himself. And I thought, as a podcaster, I would recognize my own voice. I'd be like, you sound like me, masked stranger.
Yeah, he had a mask on playing.
I think 98% of people don't podcast, so.
Yeah, I hear my voice a lot every week. So I'm really glad you like it, though, because I was wondering if it was just me or if it truly was good, you know, because I'm so fascinated by the premise alone. Is that what's keeping me here? But and I'm also a fan of Joel Edgerton and Jennifer Connelly, so it seemed to check off many boxes for me personally, and I didn't know if it would for either of y'all.
They have both been so good.
This has also led to, this is completely out of nowhere, but I'm so excited, and I'm going to get the name wrong, to watch It Comes at Night after, because it already looked interesting. And then Blaine, you said it was awesome, and Joel Edgerton was awesome in it. And I'm like, sold. Okay, I didn't know how good it was going to be, but I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, that's been a 2017 horror movie for those listening.
He's just been so strong in this. Tough to take your eyes off of him. You know, he's kind of having one of those magnetic performances. Jennifer Connelly has been great too, and I think the way that she is playing the supremely confident, successful artist in one timeline, and then the mother and the happy mother and the happy wife and the, you know, whatever she's doing in the other world, curating gallery spaces or kind of more behind the scenes.
You know, she's mostly happy, right? Because there's that moment where her lawyer asks her,
Why are you running the marathon? The triathlon.
Yeah. Triathlon, thank you. Yeah, and she's like, you know, I just want to get out or whatever. And she's like, there's other ways of avoiding your family. Anyway, it's kind of and that's a nice little moment of allusion to, hey, is she 100% happy, 90% happy?
I really didn't appreciate all the strays that I caught as someone who enjoys running long distances and, you know, as a musician with successful friends.
Say
wondering
more.
What if. It's great. I don't want to say more. I did enough in my own brain while watching this program that you forced me into viewing.
At this point, Blaine, it's called rumination and it's very unhealthy.
Yeah.
What's the Adam doing who won the Grammy? Is that what we're saying? What's he doing?
Probably gardening. Making, an extra $6 a year from streaming versus now.
Hey. I think we'll probably continue this one.
I gotta catch up, y'all.
Well, we're off next week, so you can...
You think I'm not gonna waste my life? You think I'm gonna watch TV shows? No, I'm gonna be volunteering, wasting my life for charity.
Let's take a little break here, and on the other side, we're gonna talk about the documentary that came on Netflix this weekend called Butterfly in the Sky. Yeah, we're going to shift gears into the documentary, which just appeared on Netflix this weekend, Butterfly in the Sky, The Story of Reading Rainbow. It's a 2022 movie, but it's only now on the Netflix. Now, I went into it thinking it was brand new and made for this streamer.
Me too, actually, until you literally just said that.
I
assumed it was a Netflix movie.
It wasn't until I was finished watching it that I didn't know it wasn't. So, but yes, directed by Bradford Thomason and Brett Whitcomb, excuse me, and chronicles the journey of the PBS show Reading Rainbow from inception to ending. There's nothing really to spoil here, but if you want to go into the documentary knowing nothing, you will learn a few things and do it. You know, I can recommend it, Donovan.
I would recommend it. I would say that as a documentary, if you do not have the emotional attachment of watching Reading Rainbow as a child, it might not do that much for you. Like, it's sort of interesting in the abstract, but I really, the notes that were working for me were the, like, I've seen this, right? Uh-huh. It's not like a Frederick Wiseman documentary, right? Where you're like, I know absolutely nothing about how the New York Public Library works, and he's going to show me 3 hours of it, and it's going to be fascinating. This is more like if you don't have that touchstone. I don't know.
Well,
yes, thumbs up. Sorry. Recommendation.
Sure. No, but before we get into any specifics of the film, let me just say this, if you're on the fence, it's comforting, it's well done, and it does not overstay its welcome. It tells the story and then just moves on.
I would agree with that. It's less than an hour and a half by about 3 or 4 minutes, and I think that helps to make it perfectly pleasant. This sounds like damning with faint praise, and I don't mean it that way, but like, it doesn't pound something into your head over and over.
No, it doesn't. It just tells the story, and that's it.
Well, that's not true. What it pounded into my head is that reading is for nerds and the rightfully bullied.
Oh, you got me. Rightfully bullied.
No, yeah, surely, right? That's all of us. We all watch Reading Rainbow. Am I right about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So to speak for the, like, if you have that emotional attachment, it'll be fun. Like, I haven't watched Reading Rainbow, you know, since, like, the 90s. But, like, there was stuff that's, like, I remember, like, the intro, like, with the dragon. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Or, like, the star. So they show the Star Trek episode with LeVar Burton, which was, like, very revolutionary to me at the time. Like, wait, he's on Reading Rainbow, but he's also on this TV show. Like, Dad, can you explain this to me?
Yeah.
I mean, I was probably, like, 5 or 6. But now, I remember that episode. So mm-hmm. That was kind of fun, right? Like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
It really pushes a lot of nostalgia buttons.
Absolutely.
I can remember so much related to the show. I remember going to my grandmother's house and watching it every morning during the summer. And my aunt came by one morning and she made a very harsh criticism that you've already watched this. Kids will just watch anything over and over. And as an adult, I now experience the same thing, but I don't point it out. Like I'll be thinking about my daughter. Man, she's watched this like 5 times in a row. So yeah. I just leave it be, because I remember that just hurt my feelings so much. Like, but it's good.
I appreciate that my thought. So when I was 2 or 3 years old, apparently I wanted to watch Bambi every morning. But I would always
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but if you remember, they're like, there's a bit with a rainstorm, and then when Bambi's mother is dead, and that really scared me. So, like, my dad would put it in and, like, fall asleep on the sofa, and then, like, wouldn't know to wake up in time to, like, settle me down. But, like, I appreciate that he wasn't, like, when I was 4, like, you fucking kid. Like, he waited until I was an adult.
Oh, that's your,
like,
point.
You loved it over and over, and I suffered.
When reading Rainbow, I was always so sad that it was a repeat. But I would watch it, you know, I was also doubly sad that I couldn't find the books in my library, because we did not have bookstore in where I lived, and library only. And I would think, they don't have that book. We don't have Where the Wild Things Are. We only have the dictionary.
Even that's illegal now.
It does make me wonder, where do we meet kids now? Like, they talk about we had to meet them where they were, and they were sitting in front of the TV during the summers.
We meet them in Bluey.
Do we?
Absolutely.
I think it's YouTube and TikTok.
Kids love Bluey. Yeah, that too. Or Roblox.
And video games, that's right. You know, the YouTube and TikTok do have their reading niches, right? But there's also this strange toxicity that's with the book talk. You're familiar with this, right? A little?
While I was sitting watching this movie, or sorry, documentary, I was thinking, like, wow, I hate this so much less than I hate the very idea of book talk.
Yes. Did Reading Rainbow influence you to be a librarian, media specialist that you are now? Can you pinpoint that?
No, I can't necessarily pinpoint that, but I do think, which it's not what I do now, but I think when I originally went into the program, I thought it would be really cool to be like a children's librarian because of everything they express in Reading Rainbow. Like, I think that's just so important and informative and powerful.
One of my favorite moments in the doc was the creation of the theme song.
Yeah, that, I liked that too.
I had no idea it was that involved. Adam, if you only get a chance to watch a little of this, you should definitely catch the guy recreating the theme song on in his studio there.
Do they do like a classic albums?
Like a 5-minute version, yeah.
Yeah. Isolated tracks.
Yeah, yes.
Get everything out on the board.
Yeah, he builds it. And I'm like, no, it did not. And he's like, we're almost there. And I was like, wait, there's more? I'm also happy they brought in the funding for PBS and how that's still an issue. It always is going to be an issue.
Sitting and watching this, I was like, please edit this out if you think I'll get canceled. But, like, goddamn Republicans.
Say more.
Going after Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, it's like the same, this is me on a little bit of a soapbox because it's hitting libraries, but, like, it's the same rhetoric. Oh, it's so anti-family. Point to it. Point to it, please. And then, of course, No Child Left Behind. Like Blaine, I'm sure you see this, but like my wife is a college writing professor, and she's like the years, like basically as soon as it switched to nothing but, I noticed a difference in writing, and not a good one. And it's like, of course, like, and you just, like, this has just continued, right? Like, you've just destroyed any, like, yeah, you can't quantify love of reading. Screw you.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. And to be fair, like, there are a lot of technocratic Democrats that think this way, too, where if everything's not measurable, then it's not real.
Back then, maybe more so. With Newt Gingrich, speaking of him, back during his day, it was a lot more of funding. Like, well, if we can just trim this budget right here, we don't need this.
You know, I think we've even seen that, right? Like in like the Trump era and stuff that's, and I think they're laying the groundwork for that with a possible Trump presidency. Everything like NPR, it's just this liberal, you know, what's his face? Not Barry Weiss. The guy that wrote the op-ed about, oh, it's so liberal. It's like, okay, guy. Come on. Right? It's just laying the foundation for further degradation of. Or I remember, you know, when I lived in Alabama, the year that PBS funding in Alabama became less neutral, right? Became more, the programs that could be on there were more according to the whims of the governance in Alabama. You know, it's just, it's the same, everything old is new again.
The documentary weaves through some various emotions, I thought, really well.
Mm-hmm.
How it, when it tracked the joy of beginning versus this oppositional funding, you know, what do we do now? But I'm like you, I was appreciative that it included this shift into testing from No Child Left Behind, which still reverberates. It's just testing constantly. I see it in my own child who's only in first grade.
I see it just with kids young adults, because they're not kids anymore when they get to me, but just like not all, and by no means all of them, and by no means am I blaming the students, because my students are really exceptional, but a lot of them just really struggle with things like, you know, like they can like remember the little bit, but if you ask them like, okay, like put out these dates in history and how they relate to each other, they're just like,
Yeah.
Or even like reading is very, very difficult. Reading and extracting a point to take out and apply, it can be very, very difficult to them because it's not what they've been trained for, you know, and all of a sudden they're in college and a professor is saying, hey, check out some scientific literature. And it's just like, it's light years beyond what they've done or away from. They're more like different genres, but it's tough.
And that's a direct result from testing, pick the right answer. But also I think that teachers, and I'm speaking to myself, you can squeeze in sometimes some inferential type thinking and connection making, but the questions aren't just recall.
Yeah.
It's a matter of getting away from just that sort of recall kind of thinking.
Yeah, and this is a completely other soapbox, but I do think that this is the reason students come in. Well, I mean, one of the reasons, because students do what they do for reasons that have been consistent across time, but like I do think that because they've been given these little snippets and been like summarize it or like pull out the main point, now they come into college and they're like, oh, I can just use ChatGPT for my discussion board question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, to any students listening, all of your teachers and professors can tell, and the reason they can tell is because it's not sufficient to the assignment. It's just like, it's bad. It sucks. It's not good. Yeah. But when all you've been taught to do is summarize a little snippet, I could see how you would be like, this is adequate. Why do I need to think about this?
Yeah.
That's a whole other soapbox.
Certainly tracks that the show originated with an educator.
Yes, absolutely. And I like that it's not only an educator, but an educator that was like a reading educator.
Yeah.
Someone who's like, oh, my ideas work. I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever listened to, this is a little bit off the point, but I was thinking about, obviously this documentary is somewhat of a hagiography of LeVar Burton, but that's perfectly fine.
Right. He seems so central.
Like, he seems like a nice dude too, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever, but they talked about and they showed a little bit of his LeVar Burton Reads podcast. Have you ever listened to that?
I never have.
It's actually kind of great because he picks short stories that he loves mm-hmm. and reads them. And they are like, it's everything from Elmore Leonard to Octavia Butler. And really? he is a good reader and a good narrator.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got some time to kill, also the other nice thing about them is he will often select stories that are hard to find otherwise. Not always, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. You just gotta listen to him.
Well, he's had the practice.
He certainly has.
We've talked about everything but the documentary, it seems. But, you know, the documentary kind of speaks for itself.
It does. Like, my feelings on it was, like, you know, like, I did appreciate getting the, as an adult, like, the behind-the-scenes look to what they did for kids, especially, like, and stuff I didn't remember, too, right? Like, was, like, talking about homelessness. I wasn't watching it by the time they tackled 9/11. You know,
no, you were there. You were in the shit.
You were in the shit?
One of my questions for y'all was going to be, what year did they stop making it? And I am shocked that they covered 9/11.
Yeah, they went to the... So in the documentary, they cover this, but they decided to go to the public school that was closest to Ground Zero, which had actually been closed because of the, you know, the environmental effects of massive buildings falling down and catching on fire and all that, and talk to the kids about what their experiences of that day was like. And then the aftermath too, which was really, you know, I mean, it did, like, they put a little Mr. Rogers in here, and it really did remind me of, like, Mr. Rogers coming, you know, like, battling cancer, coming back to talk directly to kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do think one of the things that I really loved about this, and I think is in tune with the show, is that it does not talk down to children. And in fact, like I'd forgotten about, like, the book reviews, right? But, like, they just let kids, like, talk, like, hey, like, be completely weird kids.
Yeah.
And say, hey, here's what I liked about this book. And, like, it's so, maybe not 100%, but it's so rare to find something that's educational but not didactic.
Right.
Where, like, they're not, like, the kids are not, like, except for, like, the broad love of reading, right? Like, the kids are not being forced to come to any conclusion. You know, it's just like, hey, worms eat bats in this cave. Isn't that awesome? You know,
yeah,
like,
for real.
There's no, you know, there's nothing.
And so many books are evergreen. So I could sit my daughter down, and I think she'd still dig all these episodes of Reading Rainbow, if not,
yeah,
you know, the majority of them, I suppose.
I think that is another, like, the documentary didn't speak to it, but kind of an unspoken thing. It's like they were really on a streak.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you as a kid, right? Like, if you ever encountered, like, that Reading Rainbow sign on a book, you're like, oh, this is going to be good.
The Oprah's book club of the children's exactly. world.
Oh, yeah.
For six-year-olds.
It totally was. It was funny to me, just a personal little thing. When I started watching it and they said, well, we wanted LeVar Burton, but he was a huge star. And I thought to myself, wait, was he? And then they go, he was in Roots. And I go, oh, shit, he was in Roots.
Like, literally the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Like that year.
How could I forget that? Yeah, I just assumed he started with Reading Rainbow, but I'm a dunce.
He was like 18 when he was in Roots. He was.
Yeah.
It's funny because I both knew, like, I simultaneously knew him from Reading Rainbow and then my dad watching The Next Generation, which led to, like, this, like, mind freak of, like, Reading Rainbow is on the set. I don't understand that.
The episode with the guy who did the theme song?
Yeah.
I can remember watching that one.
There were a couple. I did like that. Like, I mentioned a couple, but there were a couple that were like, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I watched that.
Talk to me about reading today. And I'll chime in with this one anecdote, is that people still read, like students still read, believe it or not. It's not Desolation Row out there. I still see a lot of students walking around with books.
Mm-hmm.
True, like, that I see personally. Now, that's anecdotal, but so what do you do to get kids to be interested in reading?
Pay them.
It's still probably not enough, right? What'd you say, Donovan?
I said pay them. That is $1 million question, right? Because I was even just reading a article about how, like, literally just having your phone, not being on it, but just having your phone while you're reading seems to take a bit of our attention away from what we're reading. That's tough, true. Right? Like, reading is not something that, like, we evolved for, whereas, like, looking at, like, other people and being, having, like, novel stimuli, like, yes, we evolved for that. We're seeking that out. I don't really know how you make a kid love reading. Some of these teachers out here are doing something right, because, like, my boss's kid, she loves reading. So much so, like, right, like, she's, like, how old is she? This happened when she was 9. She's 10 now. I was reading Under the Volcano by Malcolm Lowry, which I didn't enjoy. And she was reading...
Donovan just goes ahead and throws the author under the bus real quick. Yeah,
he's fine. It's basically the only thing he read. He was an old drunk. But she was reading... Have you seen, like, these, like, Warriors books? You know, they're like... I think they're, like cats and dogs that can talk. Does that... it doesn't matter. But she comes up to me, and she's like, what are you reading? I'm like, oh, it's Malcolm Lowry's Under the Volcano. It's one day in the life of a British consul in a Mexican town. She's like, does it have violence in it? I'm like, not really. She's like, I only like books with violence in it. So, like, teach something's going right, right? Like, she loves to read, and she knows what she likes.
Yeah.
But man, oh, man, how do you beat the iPad?
Yeah. Well, my daughter likes reading.
Good for her.
Still, kids out there.
She's six still, right? Is mm-hmm. she really, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She can read short little books by herself, like the Mo Williams books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like Elephant. The Pigeon and stuff.
Oh, man. She loves those. I buy her one of those probably once a week, it seems like.
That's awesome.
Do you remember where your love for reading began?
Yeah. My, you know, Reading Rainbow might be on the right track. My dad read to me when I was, I can remember being like before bed, right? And I can remember being probably 4, maybe 5, and he read The Hobbit to me. And I just thought, over Success of Nights. And I just thought it was great. And, like, he loved it, right? So you pick up some of that, right? Like, it's your dad. It's something he loves. It's something you love, you know? And so just from that, I just, like, fell in. And, like, also, like, a lot of the stuff that my dad liked as a kid, I also liked. So he would recommend things to me. And it's like, yes, actually, I do like this. And I also started reading fairly early. I was still at the stage where I would, like, watch Sesame Street. But by the time I was, like, when I started first grade, I was reading little chapter books. And by the end of sixth grade, I could read, like The Chronicles of Narnia, you know, like a simple novel.
And Adam, you were beaten into reading, right? Morgan Morrow took a belt to you every time.
Pretty much. No, it was the same as what Donovan described. I mean, it has been so much a part of my life that I don't remember the details of it not existing, meaning...
Mm-hmm. That's a very Harper Lee quote there, same. Adam.
Is it?
Yeah, where Scout says, reading's like breathing. I wouldn't, you know, you don't notice it until it's gone away or something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's having stories read to me, both age-appropriate and not... Donovan talked about being read The Hobbit. Apparently, yes. My dad did not read word for word, but decided it would be appropriate to tell me the story of For Whom the Bell Tolls.
and young 3-year-old Adam, and that was what When the Earth Moved means.
Right, right. I thought it was bad writing then in an otherwise great novel, and I stand by that opinion today.
Yeah, but, I'm right there with you. Like, excise that. Not because it's sex, because it sucks.
But, you know, like, I was just going to say, I think particularly being from this is not something people brag about anymore, I guess, but in the good sense of the word, a very Southern family. And by that, I mean, when they all lived in the same town, it was a lot of meals shared and the same stories got told over and over again, so that I was almost... born into, like, needing to learn this family mythology that almost went hand in hand with reading. If that makes, like, stories are very important. I can't ever think of a time where that wasn't true. And, you know, things like Reading Rainbow and whatever just kind of expanded the scope of what was out there.
I do think, too, another thing for me, I was just thinking this as Adam said it, but, like, I had good models. Like, my dad read... Like, even to the point where, like, if I was in the tub, he would be reading something. Like, he was keeping an eye on me. I didn't drown, right? And like, he was good, right? Like, he wasn't just ignoring me. Like, I'd be like, what are you reading? And he'd tell, you know, like, he'd tell me. But I think just, like, that kind of model really. And then, like, my mom helped me. She took an interest in, like, developing like early literacy, and this was before like phonics education had completely gone out the window, right? So she helped me like sound words out, and you know, so that was, I think, having two models like that was really big.
I'll wrap with two related stories. I did not have models, which was...
I was actually kind of curious about your story, Blaine.
Well, no one read books in my house, no adult. They didn't have time or energy, probably. But my grandfather would buy me endless amounts of comic books. Like, I could go, and he would buy five at a time. And people, I can recall people asking him maybe why, or he would always comment to the cash register. He said, he would say, this boy loves to read, and as long as he's reading, I'll buy him whatever he wants, whatever he wants to read. And but it was comic books, so it was questionable on, like, is this good? And I think that that triggered me to picture what I'm reading so that when I did get into things that weren't comic-related or, you know, school, I could picture what was going on in the text, yeah. And that helps me still to this day. But the second part of this, which is just depressingly sad, he couldn't read.
Oh, wow.
And
good
he...
Man, that's so awesome that he, like, did that for you.
Oh, yeah. He was... I can remember him telling me over and over, get all the education you can because nobody will take that away from you.
Yeah.
Things like that. Just big statements like that. But he couldn't read. Now, this is where it gets incredibly sad. So grab your Kleenex. I didn't know that. Uh-huh. And I would take books to him, picture books, whatever, you know, Where the Wild Things Are, take your pick. And I'd take them to him and I'd say, hey, let's read this. Or you read this to me. And he just went by the pictures.
When did you realize that?
Pretty quick. Pretty quickly after I could read, because I was realizing, right. Man, he's having a lot of trouble sounding that word out. I don't think he can read.
That's certainly bittersweet, because he must have just loved, like, what I hear is, like, he must have just loved you an awful lot, even to, like, expose himself to, like, you figuring out he couldn't read, but wanting to read books with you. Like, that's very
the same common thread of important adults for all of us, mm-hmm. turning mm-hmm. reading into,
the model.
Like, a very noble pursuit. You know, like, mm-hmm. this is a life worth living includes this. This is mm-hmm. higher than what your immediate day to day is. Ideas matter, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'd agree.
That's how we're here on this podcast.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Before we say goodbye, another reminder that we are off next week, but pin your question and send it to thealabamatake@gmail.com. Or hit us up on any social media and send us a question if you'd like for us to answer a question for you in episode 200. Wow. For Adam and Donovan, I'm Blaine, and this has been great. We'll talk to y'all in 2 weeks.